brother decide to, you know, do this duo frontman thing? It's kind of different.
He started. Well, we used to be heavier. And I used to be a heavy guy singer, and at one point we let him sing a couple songs, and he and I are both Kiss fans, and you know, and Kiss, you know, had multiple singers, and we just thought it was cool, and gave, you know, broke the album up, and stopped it from being monotonous like a lot of albums we'd listen to. We'd like three songs, and then the rest of the album would be kind of a repeat of those three songs, and we just didn't want to do that. We wanted to have an eclectic album and let different voices step up, and it kind of makes the band flesh out more. It's not just one voice, you know. You get to hear everybody's view of life and how they see things. And it worked, and people liked it. You know, we had a few industry people, it doesn't work, you can't do that. I'm like, why can't I do it? And as long as people like it, man, and people enjoy it and accept it, and people pay money to see it, we're going to do it. So that's kind of how we got there, man. Experimenting, and then people dug it, and we took it further, and now Jared sings. Jared sings the lead on Sound of Silence.
Okay, how else do you think you're different from your brother vocally?
I'm a little more aggressive. I like up-tempo songs more. Marty's more of a songbird. We sound similar, but he's more technically, he's technically a better singer than I am, but I just have a different voice, a little huskier, and as far as lyrically, we're definitely different. My brother's more of a fantasy writer, like Bury Me in My Guns, which is great, and I used to be that way, and a lot of my songs are more about, you know, especially lately, issues I'm dealing with, or, you know, really digging deep down inside, like the song Empty Man, which is about myself. I have to admit that the Empty Man is me. And you know, we kind of differ on that front, but we both kind of critique each other's vocals and make sure that they're up to par to each other's standards.
Okay, is there any sibling rivalry or anything like that?
Not really. We get along really good for brothers, I gotta admit. I mean, occasionally with too much Jägermeister, we'll get into a brother screaming match. I'm gonna choke you. You know, that happens like once, maybe every few months. But we, as brothers, I gotta admit, we get along really well.
Okay, great. At times, depending on who's singing, the band can sound completely different. Do you think this works for or against you?
It can work against. You know, some people may not like it, may not float their boat, but, you know, I think it works for us if you're a Bubba Flex fan. It's just part of our world, you know. There's a different guy popping up. When I listen to Kiss, you know, Gene Simmons definitely picked different songs and sang different styled songs than Paul Stanley would. Now, in the 70s, they didn't have quite the recording technology they do today, so, you know, you had one guitar tone on the whole record, you know, for sure, and or at least it sounded that way. So, but I always use that model, you know, and you know, Gene was more the demon, which I feel I'm a little more Gene. Martin's a little more Paul. And you know, I think it works for us, man. I mean, it definitely, in the industry, suits who want to sign the next Theory of a Dead Man or just a super corny rock band that only, you know, 45-year-old DJs like and older people, you know. I mean, they're not going to get it, probably. But I'm not worried about that.
Okay, what's the band's creative process like? How do you guys put songs and albums together?
Just about everybody comes and steps with a skeleton of a song, and you know, basically everybody puts their 10 cents in. It kind of goes to a Bubba Flex gauntlet, and you know, one guy, we said, I don't like this song. You know, it takes a couple months and they work them in, and we all kind of put our stamp on it, and it ends up coming out. And anything I came up with in my head definitely sounded different when it was done, but I was happier with it, because I tend to go more towards a Guns N' Roses style, and once the band, you can still hear that influence in like Low Life and stuff, but once the band puts their harmonies on it and Jared gets on there, it sounds a little more Queen in parts. It ends up being its own animal. You can hear the influence of whatever I wrote it as, but once everybody else puts their 10 cents in, it totally changes it.
Okay, how did you guys handle the TBT Records bankruptcy as a whole? How do you think it made you better as a band?
Well, we had to fight hard. We got three divorces through it. We lost management. Pretty much anybody and everybody gave up on us except our fans. And I couldn't believe, you know, how hard times are for touring and anybody, that we still drew just enough and played just enough and sold enough t-shirts to pay our legal fees. We had to file bankruptcy. And we took our time writing Hell in My Heart, because, you know, we couldn't release an album because we were owned by a bank for about 2 years. about a year and a half maybe at best. And so in that time, we just kept writing and recording. We couldn't release it, and that's how there's 16 songs on the album. And we felt our fans waited long enough. It's almost our Chinese democracy. It's like, you know what? This song, you know, a couple songs like Rise, I thought was a little different stylistically for the record. I just thought it was kind of out in left field. And I thought it was a little out left field, but it's a good song. It's a cool song, and fans liked it. So I thought, you know, instead of trying to trim it down and make the typical 10-song record you listen to in 24 minutes, I thought, let's give the fans everything. As long as we think it's a good song, it may not be exactly what the album needed, but, you know, they waited so long. Give them enough vocal flex to where I always liked long albums that had 16 and 19 tracks, the Beastie Boy albums of the 90s, because you'd listen to the whole record, and you wouldn't even discover track 16 or 15. You might listen to it, but in a year's time, you're still listening to the record, and by that time, maybe 15's your favorite song. Finally, you've come around the end of the album. As opposed to 10 songs, you know, you go through them, and it's easier to make a solid album that way, but I always loved long albums. It took me a long time to get to every song and give it you know, proper appreciation. And it lasts longer. That way they're not biting and chomping at the bit for an album, you know, 6 months from now.
Okay,
which we're already working on that.
The thing I like the most about the album is the first 20 seconds of every song is completely different. It's like you guys kind of pay very close attention to kind of hooking the listener right off the bat. How much time and effort goes into that?
Well, it was almost a management thing, and I just, you know, they're always like, this is a single, this is not a single, and we just want to make sure, you know, you're living in the era of where people's attention spans are shorter. Articles in USA Today are specifically written short and quick bursts. It's the age of the commercial, it's the age of the sidebar on the computer, you get a quick bang, and, you know, books like, say, The Heroin Diaries are bestsellers. Now, it's not a fictional novel, but it's written in little statements. Like, it'll be a paragraph from one guy and a paragraph from the next, and it's very flashy on the page. And that's the way songs are kind of going, that you don't have time. It's not 1975. We can't write Stranglehold. As much as I like the 70s, you know, and I love Tool, too, but we're not Tool, and the way we're doing it is, you know, getting to that quick, get them fast and get them involved and keep them excited the whole time.
Okay, whose idea was it to cover Simon and Garfunkel on the new album?
It was my brother's. I was totally against it. I was like, what are we doing a Simon and Garfunkel song for? It's like, what are we going to do, cover Mamas and the Papas on the next record? I was totally against it. I wouldn't even have a part in it at first. I was like, oh my God. So we already had, you know, basically a ballad on the album and a couple laid back, you know, rock joints. I was like, why do we need just a folk song? So we rocked it out, and then they, you know, that happens with this band. There's always someone not with something for a minute, and then once you give it time, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling this now. This is cool. And it took me a minute, but, you know, once I heard our version of it and everything, I liked the song. I just didn't think it matched. And, but they seduced me to it, man.
Okay, in an interview you did in March, you said you've never been happier with an album the band has done. Does this sentiment still ring true today? Why?
Absolutely. Every album we did before, I always, even after it was done, I'd cringe, especially at my own vocal parts. I'm like, oh, that could have been better. We had great producers, but always felt like there wasn't enough focus on the vocals, because Vocal Flex is basically a vocal band. That's our strongest point. And Dirt Town was great, but I thought a lot of focus was on the guitar, which is fine. But, and then, you know, before, like, Apologize for Nothing was a demo that actually ended up being a record. And the label pushed and just got it mixed for like $70,000, which is ridiculous, and put out a demo of songs that basically were not finished songs. They weren't structured very well, and so that one, that whole album makes me cringe. And the one before that was our first effort on Eclipse Records called Primitive Epic, and it's just a mishmash of, gosh, hip-hop, rock, metal, and it's a cool record, and a lot of people like it a lot, and we still play some songs from that album, but, you know, it just... I feel like we're actually formed as a band. We're tight live. We've been tight for a long time, but I feel like stylistically we're together and everybody kind of knows where we're going. And, I mean, like you said, this album, you know, a lot of songs, you know, are eclectic. They go to different places. But compared to the last records, it definitely is the most cohesive record we've ever done as far as sound goes. And I'm happy with that. And then, too, just the songwriting process and the recording process, I've just, you know, on a personal level, I feel like I'm very happy with my vocals. There's nothing that makes me cringe on the record. I'm like, ooh, could have done that better. And in the past, I'm always super critical too, man. I'll get in the studio and cuss and punch walls and overly and do the same line over and over and over when everybody else thinks it's fine. So I'm my own worst critic. But I know the rest of the band feels this way too, man.
Okay, over the years, you guys have toured with Seven Dust, Nickelback, Filter. Are there any other bands in particular you'd love to tour with?
I would love to open for Motley Crue. I would love to open for. I'd like to play with the Maylene and the Sons of Disaster. They're an amazing new band. Well, not new, they've been around for a minute, but they're just kind of breaking out on the last couple of Warped Tours, and they're just awesome, man. And who else? Another thing would be to open for Iron Maiden. That's not going to happen, but that would be really cool, too.
Well, so is there anything else that you want to say about the new album? Maybe something that'll kind of attract some new listeners?
Yeah, absolutely, man. The album was written through the greatest strife of the band. A 2-year legal battle, 3 divorces, and it's called Hell in My Heart because, you know, we felt like to move forward, we went against all odds when everybody didn't believe in us, from our wives to a management, but our fans did, and they supported the record, and they paid for it. You know, every album by a band is paid for by the fans if they're making one, but this one was literally, we put the album together, we paid the producers, we did all that ourselves, man, and it's because of our fans, and everything on that album, it comes directly from the heart. We put everything we could into it, and that's why it's called Hell in My Heart. We feel like if you really believe in something and everything is coming against you, you should move forward with hell in your heart so nothing will stop you. So pick it up.
All right, Sean. Thank you so very, very much for your time. I really appreciate it.